Hi and welcome to the Journey to a Dream podcast, which is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance and also supported by the Andreas Racing Association here on the Isle of Man. Essentially, this is all about talking to people who are passionate about motorsport. And as we speak, it is MGP and Classic TT 2025. So I've got two guests today, and they are going to be able to give us a real insight to both sides of this sport, both from a rider's point of view and also a partner's point of view. Let's meet them.
Hi, my name's Chris Moore. I'm 56 years old. I live in Newmills, Derbyshire, England. Although I'm born on the Isle of Man, I've been racing for 35 years and love the Isle of Man.
I'm Chris's wife, Lorna. We've been together for just under 35 years, so practically the whole time we've been together he's been racing, and that's me.
Okay, Chris, so I was going to mention, obviously, your Manx roots, and it's clearly something that's still very important to you.
Absolutely. Although we moved away when I was 3 years old, but yeah, proud Manx man. I hate it when they get the flag wrong in the programme, so much so that I even messaged Bruce Baker this year to, you know, try and make sure that one, and then in the Classic TT programme, hasn't got the flags in anyway. No, but I'm, very proud. I follow all the sort of Manx news all the time. You know, I've got all Manx radio apps and keep up to speed with what's going on. I probably know more that's going on here than I do at home because I don't listen to the news at home. So.
It's a weird thing, isn't it? I think we talk quite often to people, particularly who've moved away, and that affinity with the island seems to hold really, really strongly.
Absolutely. Beautiful place, isn't it? Best place on the planet.
When then did the whole sort of bike thing start for you?
So, like I said, I moved away when I was three because my mum remarried to a TT racer who lived in England. So we ended up moving, all of us, you know, the three kids, me two sisters, myself and my mum, moved over to England. And obviously, Dad continued racing. So my stepdad, he's my dad to me, Neville, yeah. So we did all the short circuit stuff with him, and then every year we'd come over and we'd do the TT with him. So I was brought up with it, absolutely. You know, it's all I knew was race paddocks at a weekend and then the Isle of Man once or twice a year. It was usually, at that time, it was just for the TT. So yeah, that's just brought up with it. It's all on you, yeah.
Do you know, I often think, talking to people, it sounds almost idyllic being a child growing up in that environment.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's changed a lot, but it's nice to see young families now. You know, you see Jamie Coward's family, you almost feel like you know them all really well because you see the kids around the paddock so much. And yeah, it is a good environment in a lot of respects, but it has changed a lot. You know, the health and safety's kicked in, so...
So we probably shouldn't talk about some of the things you got up to, is what you're saying.
Well,
there.
Maybe, yeah, maybe not.
When did you get your first bike?
Oh, blimey. When I was 16. My dad was racing. He didn't have any spare money, so wasn't wealthy at all. So it all went on the racing. So, yeah, I got one road bike when I was 16. And I didn't start racing until I was 20. But again, it's all self-funded because my dad, again, was still racing then. So all his money went on his racing, and I had to sort of do it myself, yeah.
But was he quite supportive of you?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. So, you know, he'd troll around the local bike shops, and we were always looking for sponsors, and we were trying to use kind of his influence, you know, because everybody knew him. He was a real gentleman around the paddock. Didn't really work, you know, because you have to prove something, don't you? But we got a little bit of help on, you know, my first kit. You know, I got discounts off the new helmet and things like that. But he steered me in the right direction. You know, I started racing at Darley Moor, and that was a club that he'd spent many, many years racing there. So I was very quickly taken under their wing and sort of nurtured amongst the organisers, you know. So I was known as Christopher Neville's son, you know. Oh, this is Neville's son.
And you must have been pretty proud of that. I mean, you speak of him so fondly.
Absolutely, yeah. Anybody that met me dad, I've never heard a single bad word about me dad. He was a true, true gent, yeah. And you could tell that, you know, obviously... He passed away 3 years ago now. But yeah, a lot of the messages that came through was just, what a gent, lovely man. You know, that's all you ever heard. So yeah, he was a good, proud supporter. He used to go to a lot of the meetings to watch me, so.
And how did your mum feel about your racing?
I don't know. Supportive, I think. Yeah. And she certainly is now. You know, in the early days, maybe not so much because she'll... I don't know, we'd have to ask her. I've never truly asked her.
For parents, you are thinking, you know, there's part of you that wants your child to go and do everything that they want to do if it is a dream of theirs. But, you know, the inherent risks will be there. And, of course, you'll have seen her husband sort of struggle with the financial side of things. So there'll always be a bit of a worry, I imagine.
Yeah, I think certainly the financial side of it, she's definitely seen that. Like I say, we didn't struggle as a family. You know, the upbringing, I'm totally happy. I know I didn't have the same things as a lot of my friends did, but that's just circumstances. You know, I don't feel I had a bad childhood in any stretch, though. You know, we got to come here once a year. You know, it was good. Yeah.
And either of your sisters interested in motorsport?
So, yeah, they obviously follow my racing exploits. And Debbie has marshalled over here. Debbie now lives over here because my mum and Debbie moved back here about 7 years ago. And she's done a stint of marshalling. So she's very keen on it. But it's all time permitting whether she can get to watch any of the sessions, you know, with work and nannying the two grandchildren that she's got now.
So going back to 20-year-old Chris Moore, who was sort of just starting out, how did you balance that side of things, the wanting to go out and race and whatever, with sort of real life, in inverted commas, and having to work and doing that?
I still got out all right, you know, good visits to the pub every weekend, but it was really hard, you know. So at first I didn't do anywhere other than Darley Moor, and I found that a real stretch on the budget. But you always seem to make the money to do it, because you didn't get any sponsors back then, you know. But you always seemed to find the money. You just did a bit of overtime when you could.
And what was the day job?
Back then I was concrete drilling and sawing concrete. The old boss then used to let me use the van, so that was one aspect. I didn't have to find a van to buy, you know, because I got used to the works van. So that saved quite a lot of money. Apart from there was one trip to Pembrey, wasn't there? That was an eye-opening one. So we rented a van for that one, and then a couple of our pals followed us down on road bikes as well. And then on the way back to Darley Moor, because it was a bank holiday weekend, one of the lads actually crashed quite heavily. Yeah, that was quite an experience. Everyone got to Darley Moor very, very late and tried putting tents up. It was, not a good experience, that one.
That is a racer's life, though, isn't it? All those sort of unexpected things happening. At what point was the focus on racing over here on the Isle of Man?
It was something that I always wanted to do. But initially, it wasn't that high on the radar, because it was just a case of trying my best to fund it. When I became more aware that I was actually quite good at it at club level, so I was winning Darley Moor championships, going to other circuits and doing quite well. And then I got a sponsored ride on a TZ250 Yamaha. And that was really then I thought, oh, I'd love to put an entry in at the Manx here and do the newcomers. Sadly, though, my sponsor with that Yamaha, he passed away just before we were sort of setting the wheels in motion to do it. And I was lucky enough that the family let me purchase the bike so I could sort of continue the dream, if you like. And then in 1996, we put the first newcomers entry in. And that was, we were skint, completely skint. But we had a right nice little windfall because we won the lottery in 1996. Can't remember what month it was, probably about February or March. So we'd already committed to renting a house over here for the fortnight. You know, all the ferries and everything, we were committed. And it would have absolutely skinted us, but then we were part of a syndicate that won. It was a good chunk of money. At that time, you know, I think about £30,000 we won as a couple, because we had two shares in it. And you imagine that, that's game-changing in 1996. Felt like Rockefeller, yeah. Really did, yeah.
But it just must be, Chris, the relief as well, because, I mean, again and again, we just talk about the finance side of things. But, yeah, that kind of feels like somebody's looking out for you there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Honestly, it was game-changing. I mean, you say 30,000, don't get me wrong, £30,000 is a lot of money, even today. But back then, it really was, you know, it was sizable. It meant we could get new back door, we could get central heating put in the house, a new kitchen.
You could get central heating put in the house.
Yeah.
Storage heat.
Yeah. Game changing. And then obviously that sort of carried me through then, because I seriously think 1996 probably would have been a one and only trip to the Isle of Man racing, because I think it would have absolutely broke us.
You did say you were only going to do it once.
Yeah, that was always the thing.
Lots of people say that. Yeah. I think. Yeah.
But then, obviously, I did really well. I won the newcomer's C race, so that set, you know, I'm all right at this. Don't get me wrong, there was a guy that was beating me in practice. I think his name was Derek Cohen, a lad from Ireland, and he was faster than me all week in practice. But unfortunately for him, he broke down first lap of the newcomer's race, and it elevated me. And the bug's there then. The book was kind of already there, but yeah.
Yeah, it does sound like it already was. I just want to go back to then, Lorna, when you two met. What do you remember about meeting Chris for the first time?
I'd been in America for a year working before I went to uni, and I came back and it was for my sister's 21st, and he was friends with my sister's boyfriend at the time. I don't know, I don't really remember that much. I met you just before her 21st.
I got quite smitten.
Yeah, he was quite smitten initially. And we met then, and then we started going out. It was about a year later, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Kissing on a hay bale at some drunken party after being at the pub all night. And then I went home. My mum and dad lived in Sheffield at the time, so I went back there. And then he came over to Rodie's. What did you have at that time?
DT125. I rode it all the way from my house to Sheffield.
How long did that take?
About an hour. And I didn't even know where the house was. I had to sort of go off memory because I dropped some furniture off there in my van at some point. So I made this commitment to drive over and try and remember where the house was. And when I got there, they were just going for a quiz night at the pub. So I joined them for the quiz night. And
did you get any questions right?
I probably didn't. You'd struggle to beat Lorna's dad in a quiz anyway. Yeah, so we just smooched a bit more, and that was the start of that, so, yeah.
And Lorna, did you have any interest in bikes at all?
Not really. I'd been to the races with my sister to watch Chris, but no, not really. It wasn't something that was in my background, but it was good. You know, it's exciting to watch. Yeah, and I've just been going ever since, really.
And we talk, again, a lot about the sacrifices that are probably made because of this passion.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that sort of has to give. You know, I don't know whether there's many long-haul holidays or whatever, but I just wonder what that side of things is like from your point of view.
Well, we go on holiday to a tropical island about twice a year, don't we? Three times if we include coming to see your mum at Christmas.
Listen, so. I sell it as palm trees and sand, because if you get off a plane, there's palm trees. If you get off the boat, there's palm trees. And there's always sand, there's water. To me, it's a tropical island.
You need to work for tourism over here, Chris.
But, you know, we get to do all the stuff. It's fine. And I like coming to the racing. Got friends in the paddock that you see year in, year out. It's a friendly place. It's good. But don't get me wrong, if there was another long-haul holiday on the cards at any point, then it would be greatly appreciated.
How do you find it, sitting and watching him go out? What's that like for you?
Short circuit, absolutely fine. That's just, you know, whatever, it's great. Over here is a bit different, obviously, because it's a much longer race, practices are longer, but you hold your breath, really, from the time that you get here till the time that is done. That's kind of what it's like. But I do like to be here. You know, in previous years, when I was working, I'd have to maybe go back during practice week and then come back again. Or in the TT, I had to be at work. So that was hard. But you're watching the timing on the app, you're watching and you're going, oh, you can go faster than that, and oh, he's ahead of you, you should be beating him, and that sector wasn't very good, and, you know, all those kind of things, and wanting him to go faster. And then you're looking at the speeds, or you go watching, or like when we were marshalling, and in certain places it's so fast that you think, oh no, I don't like this. But you're very much split between the two of wanting him to slow down and not do it, and wanting him to do better and be more competitive and go faster. So it's quite a weird feeling.
We'll talk about your marshalling in just a moment, but obviously just heading back to the mid-90s when you won that MGP Newcomers. And at what point did you move to TT?
Instantly, and I know now, you know, as soon as you've done it, I should have stayed at the Manx in 97, because I'm always good at doing myself down a little bit, but I know I was never going to win a TT, but I really wanted to do a TT. So I made the plunge straight away in 97 to come back and do the TT. And obviously once you've done the TT, back in those days, there was no coming back to the Manx. You know, that was it, you're a TT rider. So, yeah, I did the TT for 3 years after that. You know, I was only doing it once, yeah. So TT 97, 98, 99. And don't get me wrong, I knew I was in a position. Mid-table obscurity is probably the best position, but it's levels. The lads that are winning are super quick. Then there's a whole chunk of others that are going okay, and there's always got to be someone near the bottom of the field. But everyone's going quickly. It's just the TT is different level.
So you did it for 3 years, and did you have a break, or...?
So, yeah, then we were thinking of starting a family, so sort of 99, that sort of drew a line under it, and then Bryony arrived in 2000, and I basically had 9 years off, at which point then, though, in 2009, they changed the rules, and you could come back to the Manx if you'd not done the TT for so many years. So 2009, I came back for the Manx.
And was there any conversation about that? Do you remember any sort of conversation, or was it just...
No, I don't think so. I think it was just like, oh, we're going to do the Manx.
I think I just threw an entry in and then
then broached it.
Yeah. Hoped she'd overhear it in the pub conversation, you know. In fact, I think that's kind of how it came out. You know, I was talking to someone across the table. Alana's very good at hearing things that are going on in the background. You've done what? But that, it wasn't a good trip, that, 2009. I was going okay. I think I was actually fourth in the race. And then I fell off at the gooseneck in the wet. It was back in the days when, yeah, they'd send you out in iffy conditions. And, yeah, I high-sided at the gooseneck. And I got a ride in the helicopter with a broken collarbone, which I always felt a fraud.
I wasn't there.
Where were you? Were you at home?
I'd gone home for exam results day. And I got a phone call from him saying, don't worry, I'm just in the helicopter.
We'll get into the helicopter.
Right, okay. But
I walked to the helicopter, this is why, but the only seat in a helicopter at the event, when you get put in there, it's a bed. So you can't sit there. So they lay you down and then they strap you in. And then once you're strapped in, you become part of the the procedure, if you like. So you arrive at Nobles when they land, and then the team takes over, and there's no moving from that stretcher then. Even though I took my own leathers off, I walked to the helicopter. You're in the system then. I did feel a fraud, because I knew I'd only done my collarbone, you know. But then they go into the full procedure of checking you out, because adrenaline's a funny thing. They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. But yeah, that was a bad experience. And then I had another 3 years off then. Came back in 2012.
Was that, do you think, partly a sort of a mental thing? Was it difficult to get back into it?
It could have almost been a financial thing as well at the time, you know, because the whole thing revolves around money. It's so expensive to race, you know, whether it be short circuit or here. Here's particularly expensive because you've got to add in, the ferry cost, it's time off work. But it's a long event, isn't it? You know, it's minimum sort of 10 days, isn't it? So
another 3 years off, and then another sort of overheard conversation in the pub to say you were coming back again?
Well, it went even better then, because I borrowed a 600. Never ridden a 600. Well, I had it in TT99. I rode an ageing CBR 600 in that race. It wasn't very quick. But then I borrowed a very quick ZXR 600, X-Ryan Farquhar, Air Kawasaki. It was a missile. Too quick for me, really, given the practice that I had on it. Again, that didn't end very well, because I ran out of fuel at Hillbury on the last lap.
Oh, God. Oh, I just, again, that's something I just can't imagine when things have been going pretty well.
I watched my man, Alan, he filled it up. I saw it was full. It's just, you know, we didn't get the fueling right on the bike or something. The tank was full. I saw it was full. Just one of those things. We were destined to kind of always run out. The faster I was going, but possibly should have. And the weather had changed as well, so... Again, I think there was slight damp patches, so I was possibly rolling off the throttle a bit more in places, and you actually use more fuel when you're going off and on the throttle all the time. You actually use more than just being flat out, so I think that's why we ran out there for, you know, we could have done another 100 cc's of fuel would have got me to the finish, but yeah, one of those.
Lorna, is he somebody to avoid after a moment like that?
He's not too bad, actually. It's worse driving his van round. That's when he gets annoyed with things in the racing. He's quite calm and collected about it, really. Philosophical when things go wrong.
Yeah, can be. I get an initial disappointment, you know. But then we came back because the Classic TT started then, 2013. It was a breath of fresh air, for particularly the bike that I owned, because it was an old bike that was eligible. And it was a new beginning, really. So from 2013 onwards, and I found myself at the sharp end again. So from being, you know, mid-table obscurity, I was then back on the podium again, if you like. So, yeah.
What's that feeling like when you turn right?
lucky enough to have done it four times. One of them's a little bit of I got what they call a first privateer, and I think that was in 2013. I think I was fourth overall, but you still get called to turn right to get your first privateer. It's amazing. It's amazing. I think it's got to be one of the best things. I'd love to do it at TT, don't get me wrong, but that, like I say, that'd never happen. But lucky enough to do it four times at the Manx.
And Lorna watching him?
Oh, it's really good. It makes it seem all worthwhile. Really amazing when they get, like,
it is special.
Podium and everything.
It is special, yeah.
And obviously born over here, but live, so you don't get the Manx national anthem when you're on the podium, if you're at the top.
I've only had the top step once, and that was my newcomer's year. And because there was three races all on the podium, so you've got newcomers A, B and C, I genuinely can't remember. I think Paul Duckett won the senior Manxman, so I remember the Manx national anthem playing.
I don't remember.
But I don't remember them doing an anthem for the rest of us. Mm. But that really would be a bone of contention if they got that one wrong, if I was lucky. I've never had a top step, you see. So in 2022, when I finished second in the junior, it was Francesco Caringa won the race. So it was the Italian national anthem blaring out, but yeah.
OK, well, we're going to have to keep an eye out for that one. You're the sort of person, I reckon, you might have the Manx national anthem as your ringtone on your phone.
I'm not. No.
Not quite
no,
yet?
No, no,
not quite there
no,
yet, OK.
No.
So here we are then, MGP and Classic TT 2025, and, you know, you've got that experience behind you. You've got presumably a lot of people behind you as well, because it takes a whole team of people to get a rider to the start line. Who's supporting you this year?
Well, for the past, I think it's 7 years now, it may be eight, I've had great support from Outhwaite Plantire, which is Mick Outhwaite, Steve Outhwaite and John Outhwaite. I ride Mix 250. This year I'm riding Dale Fordham's ZXR 750. So I've only used that at the pre-TT. And he's letting me use that in the Classic Superbike. And I've got Jim Lomas, who's out in the Czech Republic. I'm using his K4 Honda. I'm backed by some fantastic companies that have been with me for a long time now. iHeat, Silver Star Scaffolding. I've got an amazing supporter who comes this past year. He's coming all the way from America. Audi, the tattooist. He's an amazing tattooer. If you're ever in, is it New Hampshire in America? Look up Audi. I've got Ceramic Coatings, a local company, and friends of mine. They're helping me out. And C3 Project Services, they've been with me for a while now as well. Yeah, I'm blessed. I've got some really good support. And obviously Lorna by my side. Colin Brideson, he's been through some thick and thin stuff with me. He's helped me with the parish walk, because I've also done the parish walk a few times.
Oh, have you? Where did you get to?
Finish. Come on.
Of course he did. Yeah. Lorna, did you do it with him?
No, not at all.
Six-time finisher.
Wow.
Failed twice. Yeah.
Well, you don't really need to worry about that, do you? Yeah. Finished six times. Wow, yeah. That's amazing.
Blessed over the years with some amazing support. So long may it continue, yeah.
And in terms of what you've got going on in the pits and whatever, is that a fairly fixed crew that you've got with you?
Yeah, it's been the same crew for a long time. So we all know what we're doing, yeah. Obviously, Dale's been around a long time, helping various people. So
Lorna, would you ever get involved in that
in
side
the pits
of things?
No, absolutely not. I don't want to be there if I'd do something wrong.
I'd pay good money to see Lorna in a fireproof suit.
Absolutely
or
not.
One of
never the, happening
to get one that would fit anyway.
And we mentioned the Martian, because you got here over the weekend, so a couple of days before things sort of kicked off for you, and you both signed on as marshals, and it was Chris, the first time for both of you.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's been a real, real eye-opener to me. I've seen things change over the past few years, definitely, but to actually be a part of it and just witness how well run it is, it really is. It's slick. From the signing on, you do your little, it's an online, it takes about 15 or 20 minutes with a little exam at the end of it. It's dead easy, though. If you just watch the video, you can't fail. That process, really, really well done. And then you get out trackside, the radio communications that you hear and help off the CSMs and the DSMs telling you, it's what are you happy doing in an incident? What do you think you'd be happy doing? You know, you don't have to get too hands-on if you don't want to. If you just wanted to wave the flag in the case of an emergency, it's whatever you're comfortable with. They try and suss it out. Brilliant. Yeah, really well run.
And what was that like being on the other side of the hedge?
Christ, it's one of them when you always do that thing, you know, whenever you watch, you go, God, this is fast. It's mint. It is mint. Yeah, and we went to a really quick spot. It's a shame it got cut short the other night. We were Lorna was at Burnside, which is just on the drop after Cronkivoddy Crossroads, and I was the next marshalling post just before the 11th. And, yeah, they're trapping on down there, but unfortunately we only got to see about 20 come through, unfortunately, red flag, but, yeah, fast.
How did you find it, Lorna?
It was really fast there. I'm not sure I quite liked it there. It was better the night before, I think.
Well, it was fast there.
It was fast, but it wasn't as wobbly fast.
Yeah.
Where was that?
Exit of Quarry Bends. Yeah, the little farmhouse, which I forget the name now. And that's another thing that I've now learnt, all these little gateways, and I think they've all got names.
That's your job for next year, isn't it?
You need to learn all the names, yeah. My word. I'd do it again, absolutely. I think now we'll be busy from now on, hopefully. I'd love to put something back again, though. That's the feeling you get as well, that you're just giving a bit back. Because I've taken so much over the years, you know. You feel like you can, yeah, you doing a bit to help out, yeah, make the event run for especially the newcomers. That's what I was really keen, you know, to make sure that first session went ahead. You know, it's an important role that to make sure they get going.
Great thing to do, both of you. What is the aim this year? Have you got something in mind that you'd really like to achieve by the time you leave?
No, do as well as I can, go as quick as I can. I did the TT this year, and I wasn't happy with my lap times, but I was really happy with the result, if that makes sense. That's kind of what I'm after. I've got no goals, for just to be happy with the results. Obviously, the higher the better. But again, there's some quick lads here. You know, the TT boys are here, so it's all levels again. Like I said earlier, it's I kind of know where I am in the pecking order. I'm good at doing myself down. I am good at doing
that. I get that sense, yeah. Where do people follow your progress then? Where can they find you?
I'm just a Facebook guy. Yeah, I do a bit of Facebook, and I've got an account on X, Twitter, X, yeah.
Whatever it's called these days.
I do kind of post on that, and Lorna's quite good at tagging me in on stuff.
Well, as ever, we'll put the link to that page on the podcast page. And Lorna, I just wondered if you would have any advice for somebody who maybe is in your position, who's watching their partner go out, maybe they're sort of just starting out this year. Would you have anything that you think, actually, if somebody had told me that, I'd been quite grateful?
Just being aware of who you can speak to, you know, if you want to know things, where the race office is, what you can find out, how you can follow on the app. And also, Chris always has phone number with him, tucks a piece of paper in his boot, so that if he does break down or anything, he gets someone to ring me. That's really reassuring that you know that's happening. But really, just embrace it and be there to be part of it and enjoy it. And, you know, you're with someone that loves doing this, so let them enjoy it.
Well, it's been brilliant talking to both of you. Thank you very much for coming in. Chris, we'll see if we can get that fire suit organised for Lorna.
Yeah.
No.
Make a good photo. I'm sure it will.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Beth.
Thank you.
Just love talking to Chris and Lorna Moore. So really grateful that they took the time to pop up here. As ever, the link to Chris's Facebook, I'll post that on the page. And if I can find him on X and Twitter or whatever, I'll post that one as well. We wish them all the very, very best. Wasn't it great, though, to hear from Lorna? And I think that support is just so crucial for anybody who is involved, certainly racing over here on the mountain course. You've got to have those people around you who really get why you're doing what you do and really just let you do your thing. I was also going to ask, actually, before they left, if I could join a lottery syndicate with them. So if you are listening, Lorna and Chris, I'd be well up for that, actually. Journey to a Dream is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. You can find out more about them and how you can get covered by them by visiting their website. It's kawasaki-insurance.co.uk. The Andrus Racing Association is a great point of call, particularly for anybody on the island who wants to find out more about what they do, but also if you live further afield as well and you want to take part in any of the competitive racing that happens up there at Jerby. Do get in touch with them. The link is on the podcast page as ever. August the 24th, remember, is Jerby Day. So if you've got any interest in bikes at all, honestly, head up to Jerby. It will be quite the spectacle. Sidecars, solo machines and all sorts of things going on up there. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to Journey to a Dream. If you'd like to get in touch with me about anything at all, BethSB@manxradio.com, especially perhaps if you'd like to be part of the podcast in the future. I'll be back with another episode very soon. So until then, take care. Bye-bye.